again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller Podcast for December 23rd, 2019. The 23rd of December, 2 days until Christmas. And if you have some more shopping to do, damn, you wait longer than I do. Actually, I go to Target on Christmas Eve anyway, just because I like the atmosphere. I am a glutton for punishment. I am also Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening, downloading, tuning in, telling a friend, spreading the word. That is a Christmas miracle, and it's also a Festivus miracle, and that is the focus of today's program. It is a Festivus for the rest of us, and I probably just tapped out the microphone, but who cares? It's Festivus. You're allowed to get worked up, air the grievances, be angry, be upset, be whatever you want to be. This is America, damn it, at least for now. Like I said, I've been asking you guys for a few days now to send in your list of grievances, and you people got some problems. You got some issues. I have some grievances I want to air as well, and I will air them throughout the program as I read your grievances and probably expand upon them. I could have thought, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, what am I going to do for the show? How much should I cover the news that happened over the weekend? And there really wasn't any news that happened over the weekend. Oh, there was news, this, that, and the other thing. The argument continues over whether or not the president is really impeached, so on and so forth. But I have made an executive decision, considering I'm the only executive on the show and the only person on the show who does anything for the show. I get to make those. And I thought, if you can't abuse power at Christmas, what's the point of abusing power? What's the point of having it if you can't abuse it? So we're just going to ignore that. If you are tuning in today to catch up on the exciting Sunday shows, there was no such thing as an exciting Sunday show. Everybody's gone home for Christmas. Nobody's paying attention to the news. Even the Democrats, who said we must impeach Donald Trump immediately because he's a threat to democracy, said, but it can wait until after the new year. God, it's good. I can't imagine what it would be like to be a raging hypocrite, knowing full well that you'll never be called out on it. It's got to be a weird sense of comfort, I suppose. Most people who are hypocrites walk around going, anybody's gonna, any day now, somebody's going to catch on, call me out. Democrats just go la-di-da all day long. Anyway, you can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. We're going to do best of interviews, I think, from now, well, not now, but tomorrow through, we'll see. If something happens, every day I'm going to record a new show, but it's going to be an introduction to an interview we've done in the past. So you may have missed it. I'm going to go back as far as I can find the audio, which I ran out of space in my Gmail account a while ago, so I had to delete some things. We'll see. I've got stuff. I've got plenty of content that will come up, and there'll be little commentaries before each show's interview if something major happens. But let's hope nothing major happens. I mean, for God's sakes, it's Christmas time. Let's hope there's nothing horrible or major that goes on in the world, but you know what? There usually is. And if there is, we'll be here with it. I'll also be on the radio today, tomorrow, and what day is it? Today, tomorrow, and Friday. I'm taking off Christmas Day and the day after Christmas, mostly because I don't want to do show prep on Christmas Day. I want to tell my kids to calm down as they scream and freak out over the stuff they get for Christmas, although they're not getting a whole lot. We overdid it last year. Here's a pro tip for anybody with new kids. It's probably too late for this year, but if you're going to have another kid or your first kid next year, because, you know, all right, let's just start with the airing of grievances. I want to, before we do that, I guess we have to explain to the uninitiated what Festivus is. Now, I could explain it, but we can just go right to the source. Here is the explanation from the episode of Seinfeld, which if you haven't seen, you should, about what exactly Festivus is.
I got your message. I haven't celebrated Festivus in years. What is your interest?
Well, just tell me everything, huh?
Many Christmases ago, I went to buy a doll for my son. I reached for the last one they had, but so did another man. As I rained blows upon him, I realized there had to be another way.
What happened to the doll?
It was destroyed. But out of that, a new holiday was born. a Festivus for the rest of us.
Well, that must have been some kind of doll.
She was. And at the Festivus dinner, you gather your family around and tell them all the ways they have disappointed you over the past year.
And is there a tree?
No, instead there's a pole. Requires no decoration. I find tinsel distracting.
Frank, this new holiday of yours is scratching me right where I itch.
Let's do it then.
All right.
Festivus is back! I'll get the pole out of the crawl space.
Yeah, you don't need a pole, although if you've got one. I had one for years. Somewhere, late 90s, I went and got a pole, an aluminum pole, from my uncle and my godfather who worked in the township Parks and Rec where I grew up. And I worked for them for one summer, and they fired me because I was terrible. I actually discovered I had a hernia when I went to go get the physical for the summer that I was going to work there. And that was fun. So I had to have hernia surgery. Then I got the job after 6 weeks of recovery. And then I jumped a pickup truck, which tipped over the battery, which spilled battery acid all over the inside of the engine. And these were beat up old Fords before pickup trucks were $800,000 each. I slammed the passenger door one time and it shattered the window. I opened the driver's side door one time, and apparently it was too violent because it ripped the handle off the interior of the truck. These things were very old and beat up anyway. And I drove to our house, my parents' house, where I was living because I was 18 at the time. Drove up the driveway. I was going to take a shower because it had been a few days because I was young and stupid. And hit the awning on the side of the house, which ripped the tool rack off the back of the truck and half the awning off the house. Had to rig up both of those so no one would notice. My parents didn't seem to notice the bent awning. It's much easier to bend back cheap aluminum than it is a rack that was stuck to a truck. And so, yeah, they eventually fired me because I was terrible and I deserved to never be hired, but, you know, nepotism or something. Not really sure that you can apply nepotism in a jealous way for a job that nobody wants that paid crap for the summer where you're cleaning out garbage cans and I don't even remember what else we did. Didn't do much, but it was fun. It was, as I like to say, a learning experience. It was one of my early jobs in my list of 70-some-odd jobs. Maybe one of these days during the Christmas break, I'll do my jobs show. What do you think of that? Where I go through my list of jobs that I've had and tell you the stories I remember about those jobs. Because I don't think, except for Mike Rowe or somebody whose job it is to have jobs, to do a bunch of jobs, I don't think anybody's ever had more jobs than me, at least not on purpose. I didn't do it on purpose. I've just been a screw up until later on in life when I realized, you know, I could screw up my whole way through life and I would hate every second of it. I better do something else. Anyway, let us get to the airing of grievances. You guys were very kind. You got so many responses. I can't possibly get to them all. I apologize if you do not hear your grievances read on the program, but it's just for time that I'm not able to get to them. I also have some grievances of my own, and your grievances have led me to have more grievances, and it'll just be think of it as an improv comedy class where I am the one up on stage and you guys are shouting out ideas, as well as I'll bring a few of my own to the table. It's the holidays. Why the hell not? But anyway, I had the Festivus pole until I would have Festivus parties. I had Festivus until like 2014 when I moved to where the area I live now, when I moved in with my wife, my soon-to-be wife. We were engaged, so we moved in together. And I thought probably packing up an aluminum pole in a Christmas tree stand. And the aluminum poles are much thinner than Christmas tree stands, so I had to put like a roll of duct tape around the base of the pole so it could be held by the Christmas tree stand. And that thing was probably filled with spiders and God knows what else by the time I'd decided to abandon it to the city of Baltimore. So whoever's renting my apartment now, probably has access to my old Festivus pole, or maybe some homeless guy took it for scrap. Anyway, before we get to any of the grievances, of course, we have to tip our hats to our sponsor. It's Life Change Tea. Go to getthetea.com. Look, you're full of stuff. You're going to get rid of a lot of it because we're going to vent a lot today. But your body is having difficulty. If you run down, if you're tired, if you feel like, hey, I'm eating well and what's going on? I don't feel like I have all the energy I should. You might be coated on the inside with things that your body just has taken its time. It's tough to get rid of, stuck in the nooks and crannies. I'm trying not to get graphic because it's the holiday season, but that's the reality of biology. And as such, you need to find a way to clean that out. Well, there are all kinds of ways to clean that out, but some are less intrusive than others. And the best one I've found is Life Change Tea. It's the tea that makes you go. It cleans you out, allows you to absorb all the nutrients from the food that you eat. The food that we're eating now is heavily processed, and they're processing the nutrition right out of the food. Your body needs to absorb everything that's left in it, and it can't because it stopped up. Well, that's where Life Change Tea comes in. You brew a big gallon of it. You sit it in the fridge. You drink a cup a day. Don't overdo it because you'll be overdoing it. Don't follow the instructions. Make sure you do as directed. But once you do, in a few days, you'll notice the difference. And you'll feel different. You'll feel better. You have more energy. How do you think I keep up with two kids? There's no way I could keep up with two kids unless I was some sort of speed freak. Well, I'm not a speed freak, damn it. I use Life Change Tea. And the best place to get Life Change Tea is getthetea.com. The only place to get Life Change Tea. It's not available in stores. Go to getthetea.com. Enter promo code Derek, my name, at checkout. You get 10% off your order. You can't beat it. 10% off your order. You'll start feeling better. You'll have more energy. Your get up and go will no longer have got up and went. It will take you with it. Go to getthetea.com, promo code Derek, 10% off your order. Give yourself something for Christmas, won't you? All right, the airing of grievances. I'll kick it off because it's my program, and I said, and I'm going to stick to, it doesn't have to be political. The less political it is, this is your chance. This is, you know, there's International Women's Day, there's Left-Handers Day, there's whatever kind of day you want. Soon there'll be days for junkies and everything has to be celebrated. But we don't celebrate the airing of our grievances, and that's why I find it important to mark Festivus every year. All right, first and foremost, can we talk about people who feel the need, and these people just drive me nuts. God, I can't stand them. At this time of year, we took the kids to go see Santa Claus yesterday. I posted a nice picture of Quinn and Bailey sitting on Santa's lap in the mall, and I was reminded of some of the people who drive me nuts. Now, this may well apply to you. This doesn't mean you're a bad person, but it certainly hints at it. These people who feel the need to back into every freaking parking space they ever go into, especially in the mall, especially during crowded times at the mall. First of all, they drive around for 20 hours, making sure they don't, well, God forbid you burn a couple of extra calories having to walk three more aisles over there. Yes, it's cold, but so what? You have a jacket, put some clothes on. But then they find the spot, and you're following around, you're driving, you're just pulled in, you're trying to find a parking spot, and all of a sudden this person stops. And they go, there's a spot. Like, nope. This jackhole in front of you is going to back into the space. And it's usually not somebody driving a Mini Cooper or something small and manageable. It's usually somebody driving a dually extended cab F570,000 pickup truck that sticks out halfway into the lane anyway. And they just have to back in. And they can never do it in one turning motion. You know, you get a Mini, you get a Civic, you get something like that. You can drive it. You can back it into a parking spot. If that's really, like, what do you think is going to happen? Are you on emergency call somewhere? Are you a doctor that maybe in the middle of your trip to Target, suddenly somebody's going to have a heart attack and you got to break out and go to the hospital and you can't be bothered with the two extra seconds that it takes you to back out of a parking spot? You got to be ready to go. What is it with all of these people who back back into these freaking parking spaces. You're going to the store. Presumably, you're going to buy some stuff. Possibly buy a bunch of crap. You would then need access to your trunk. Why do you kiss the bumper of the car behind you and make it more difficult for you to get to the trunk in that case then? Because, again, the bat signal might go off. Are you secretly Bruce Wayne and you got to get the F out of Dodge and quickly speed off to the bat cave? What's going on here? You're not that important. Nobody's that important. Bruce Wayne can take the time to back out of a parking spot. You can too. Just get your ass out of the way, be considerate around people, and park your damn car. Be glad you found a parking spot. Not everybody go, oh, I need a wide berth. If your car is, you know, I could do the whole damn show on this thing. The people coupled with this, because it is usually all these people, the people who drive bigger cars than they could possibly ever need. The people who do, oh, I've got a new dually extended cab F-250. Oh, really? What do you do for a living? I'm an accountant. Well, when the hell do you need a giant-ass pickup truck for? If you have never been to a job site in your life, and most of these trucks, since they cost $80,000, $90,000, never go anywhere near a job site in their life, you don't need a pickup truck. Unless you're the friendliest person in the world who knows people who are constantly moving, not out of town, just to new places a few miles down the road, and you want to be ready at a moment's notice to help them transport a couch or something, unless you are some sort of weird who's addicted to getting big bulk items on Craigslist and need to haul them around, you don't need a pickup truck. I would say 85% of the people I see driving these new $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 pickup trucks have no business, have no need whatsoever. You can spend your money on anything you want, but what is it? Oh, I like to be up high. Well, buy an SUV or something. Well, I like to do this, I like to do that. And then you ask them, hey, you got a truck. I am getting something big and bulky or whatever. You know what? I'm going to IKEA and I'm going to buy something. Some big entertainment center or something. You think you could help me out? You got the pickup truck. Is it going to scratch the bed? The bed of a pickup truck is designed to be scratched. Trucks are designed to be trashed. That's what they're for. That's why they used to be cheap. Now they're some sort of fashion accessory, some sort of status symbol going, oh, yeah, I have a law degree, but I drive a really big pickup truck. Oh, I can't back into a parking spot to save my life. I can barely make the turn to go in forward, but boy, howdy, do I have a big-ass pickup truck. I'm super cool. No, you're a jerk. There's something wrong with you. I don't know if micropenis is real or not, but you seem to be compensating for something. And you know what? At the end of the day, you're still bald. Doesn't matter how many steps down you have to take from your perch to the ground to be able to go into the store. Your empty space in your soul that you're trying to fill with an $80,000 pickup truck is still there. All these people, don't scratch them. Can we put a blanket down on the pickup truck? Oh, I got to get a bed liner. We got to line the bed of the truck. And then we're going to put it, because I don't want to scratch the bed liner of the truck. The bed liner is designed to be scratched. The bed is designed to be scratched. Now you're putting two condoms on to make sure that the cardboard box with the entertainment center, the coffee table from IKEA, doesn't possibly ever leave a streak of ripped out cardboard. Oh, no, we couldn't possibly do that. You're driving a damn pickup truck and you work as an accountant. I don't know what's wrong with your soul, but there's something wrong with your soul. I'm here just to correct it or to point it out. Honest to God, if you got that much money to just piss away, send it to me. Send it to charity. Send it. Screw charity. Give it to me. No offense, this is going to be horribly sexist, but an inordinate amount of time. And yes, oh, ladies, you're all equal to us, but you can't drive a pickup truck. Can we just be honest about that? And I know, spare me the emails from you women out there. I drive a pickup truck and I just, do you drive it to a construction site? Do you have tools in the back of your pickup truck? If you don't have tools in the back of your pickup truck, you don't need a pickup truck. If I can't call you this weekend and say, hey, I'm thinking about getting rid of this 32-inch tube TV sitting here that I use for retro gaming that I got for free on Craigslist. I'm thinking about getting rid of it. Can you come over? Give me a hand. Maybe we can haul it to the dump. If you say, well, those things are heavy. That could scratch my pickup truck, even if we put down a blanket underneath it. Then you don't need a pickup truck. If you're going to buy one, at least learn how to drive it. If your vehicle beeps backing up, Never mind. That's just one of the examples. I got plenty more examples to get to. Things that just piss me off. But those people, see, this is just backing into a parking spot. Sent me off on a 10-minute rant. But seriously, don't buy more car than you can handle. All right, let's get to some of the airing of grievances, shall we? Some of yours were great. Some of them are less than great. We're going to start with Colleen. One of my biggest grievances is everywhere during Christmas, car commercials. They show the car driving gloriously through all sorts of conditions with no one else on the road. I think it should be illegal to close streets to film car commercials. Portland Metro, she lives up in Portland. Portland Metro has bumper-to-bumper traffic almost all day, 15 miles an hour on the highways. And yet they have commercials with a Honda CR-V driving with no traffic in Portland proper. That makes me crazy. You need to show the car in its natural environment, not natural, really made that way on purpose by idiot Democrats who mandate road diets, cutting lanes of traffic to force us out of our cars. No, car commercials should show real traffic because no car would ever make that better unless you can fly and if it had a flamethrower or a rocket launcher on the front. Where is that? We were promised flying cars, Colleen. See, I don't want to do jail time, though. I mean, I'd be down with the flamethrower or the rocket launcher, but the problem is all the murder that goes along with it. If you had access at a button, you know, people lay on their horn, they curse, they swear, and then if it was just, I could flick this button and blow up that car. First of all, I'd probably get blown up. Just truth. I think everyone, it would just be a mess. It would be sort of a mutually assured destruction kind of thing for a while where nobody wanted to use their rocket launcher or flamethrower because once somebody breaks that seal, it's game on. But sooner or later, somebody would break that seal and then it would be game on. It would just be, that jerk just cut me off. Boom. That guy's trying to back into a parking spot. Boom. And they would be blowing things up. And I've never seen, look, I've been into a lot of traffic jams. I've seen a lot of bad traffic. And I've never seen one traffic jam where traffic would move more smoothly if there were a few dead bodies and car parts sprinkled on the road. I mean, call me crazy. Maybe you grew up in a different place than I did, but that doesn't seem to be really particularly helpful when it comes to traffic, as, you know, metal strewn about. But I get the sentiment. I do love, Colleen, how they have these TV commercials where they're just driving down the street normally, la-di-da-di-da, and it is a vacant street and nobody's on it. And like, ah, and they say, professional driver, closed course across the bottom. Do not attempt. I'm like, what do you mean, do not attempt? Now, you show me a car jumping a gully, you show me a car riding on two wheels, you show me a car doing donuts and everything. I get it, you know, but you're driving down the street. If the car can't do that without it being handled by a professional driver on a closed course, you probably shouldn't sell the car. But it's because of these stupid lawyers that we put all these warning labels on everything and go, oh, no, do not drive. What, am I supposed to break out a radar gun and say that you're speeding or something? I'm not really sure what's going on here. What do you mean I can't do this? Don't do it unless there's a closed course and you happen to go to driving school and you're ready to do this. Everything about car commercials is ridiculous. Plus the prices of cars. New cars are a ripoff. I don't know anybody who would do that. All right. Next, Pete. Pete sends in. Pete and his wife listen every day. Hi, Pete and his wife. How are you? And Merry Christmas back to you. But this is Festivus, damn it. He says, the grievance that I am submitting is the one that I have with our coddled federal workforce. And it is triggered by the recent passage of a bill that gives them 12 weeks of paid family leave. God, it's good to set your own rules, isn't it? This truly sets them aside as a privileged class in America with a standard of living that is higher than that of most of the taxpayers that support them. They're serfs, P. compete. We're serfs. We're there to pay the bills and do the grunt work, and that's it. They get to decide what to do with our money. They get to decide how much of our money we take, blah, blah, blah. But this is your grievance, not mine. Please consider this. After 3 years of service, they get a month of paid holidays, 20 days of vacation each year, in addition to 13 days of sick leave that can be carried over. They are not allowed to work over 40 hours per week. And after 15 years of service, they get 26 days of vacation per year. In my work, I support a large federal bureaucracy that consists of approximately 20,000 civil servants with an average salary of $109,000 per year. They can work a compensated, a compressed work schedule that means that every other Friday is off, and they have a performance evaluation system that requires them to simply fog a mirror in order to keep their jobs. It's easier to go to Mars than it is to fire a federal employee. As I write this, they are implementing an agile work environment in which the federal employees are being encouraged to work from home in an effort to improve morale. I don't know another occupation in our country in which you can make so much money for doing so little and with total job security to boot. How much longer is this show? I'm already pretty far in, and I've gotten to two grievances. I knew I wasn't going to get to all of them, but I'm trying. Oh, God, don't get me started on these people, though, Pete. You are right, and your wife is right for having married such a smart man. Hear that, Mrs. Pete's wife? This is one thing that drives me nuts. Yeah, oh, congratulations. Oh, you need 12 weeks of paid family leave. They're doing this, they say, to encourage other companies in the private sector to do the same thing. Like, no. If a company wants to do that, fine. Why does the government need to do that? You do get a ton of days off when you're in the government. You also get what's called a pension. Now, if you're sitting there scratching your head going, what the hell's a pension? You're probably under 45 years old and you have no idea what a pension is because nobody offers you a pension. It's what a 401k used to be when they were guaranteed. It's just money. You work 20 years in government and then you can retire. I know people who have, 18 years of government experience working in the Senate or working in the House or working in various administrations or some combination of all three. And they go, well, yeah, coming up, I'm going to go and work 2 years. And there are people up on Capitol Hill in both parties who hire people. Say you got 1 year left before you qualify for your 20-year pension in government. Okay, come on in. It's not like it's a no-show job, but they'll get hired and sort of work there just for a year just to check that box. They've made their fortune. They've left government. They've made a ton of money, but they want to go back and they want to get that pension. They want to get the full pension. So they go back to government and they work that 1 year in the office, diddling around. They kind of just, meh, I'll do something. And then they get their government pension, which is a nice paycheck. The market crashes. Guess what still shows up at the same size every month? It's your government pension check. Guess who's paying for that? The people who just saw the market collapse and saw their retirement and their 401ks and their 403bs and their blah, blah, blahs and their this, that, and the other things all go down. And you work for the government. It is an elite class, Pete. It is an absolute elite class. These people make the rules. Do you really think they're going to hold themselves accountable? I love the people, and look, nothing against it. I'm all in favor of term limits too, but the people who email us, we need term limits. The only way we're going to get term limits is a constitutional amendment, which is not going to happen. It's nearly impossible to get done. Or members of Congress would have to get on board with this. And they're never going to, well, it actually has to be a constitutional amendment no matter what, I think. But that's neither here nor there. Members of Congress are never going to vote for it. Half the class of 1994 is, I don't know about half, but there's a ton of them who stayed in government for way long. Part of the contract with America was term limits. Self-imposed term. I'm going to limit myself. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then you get in Washington, D.C., and it's like, I'm going to stick around. Because power, unfortunately, is like heroin. You can't really just dabble in it. You can't be a casual heroin user. Every once in a while, I just decide to cook up a spoonful of the good stuff and shoot it right in my arm. Everybody else gets addicted to it, but no, I just play with it. I'm a casual junkie. No, you can't. You get hooked. You get hooked, and you get hooked on power too, probably much quicker. And in Washington, when you're a junkie, there's not a whole lot of people sucking up to you. You're not going, wow, you're the best junkie in the world, Bob. I love the way that you shoot heroin. The way that you manage to score $200 a day to keep your habit going is an inspiration to the rest of us. When I grow up, I hope to be just like you. No, that doesn't happen. But when you are in Washington and when your heroine is power, you get to hire a staff that has to suck up to you. And you get to go home and all the people suck up to you. And all these big muckety mucks with money, they suck up to you. And it becomes very addictive, very lucrative. And you're having so much smoke blown up your ass on a daily basis that your colon could get lung cancer. So, yes, screw federal employees. I wouldn't mind it if they could be fired for incompetence. I wouldn't mind it if we could say, you know what, the department of such and such is so out of date that we don't actually have it, or it's redundant. There are 15 other government plans that do this already, so we can get rid of this one. No, they don't do that. You're there forever. Your department is forever. Ronald Reagan, I just wrote this the other day, so I should be fresh in my mind. I think it was Milton Friedman. There's nothing as permanent as a temporary government program. And that's the way it is. It's true. Did you know that the Spanish-American War happened? You did, because you probably heard about it. Well, you might have heard about it if you went to public schools. But it happened more than 100 years ago. Nobody alive today was alive during the Spanish-American War. But most of the people who are listening to this today were alive during the Spanish-American War tax. Now, what do I mean? There was a tax placed on telephones during the Spanish-American War that was supposed to pay to help defer the costs of the Spanish-American War. Telephones were a luxury item when the Spanish-American War was raging, so a tax on telephones was a tax on evil rich people, which, you know, fine, they've been demonized forever. The problem is that once the Spanish-American War ended, the Spanish-American War tax on telephones didn't. It lasted more than 100 years. Finally, when the late 2000s, I was involved in working on this and fighting for this, we finally got that tax repealed. But if you go back and you can find I forget even what it was called, you find a bill from like 2005 from your local telephone company. In the itemized things, one of the things assessed on there was whatever it was called, a tax that was created exclusively and explicitly to fund the Spanish-American War. Why did it take so long? Because government sucks, and government said, hey, we're getting money. We're keeping getting the money. Why should we bother doing with any of these things? Why should we end this just because the war ended? Screw that noise. Let's just keep getting the money. That's how government works. You're a piggy bank to the government. All right, I'm going off too long on all of these things. Let's go. I might have to do 2 days of airing of grievances. Hell, I don't know. Next one is from Amy. Amy is in keeping with the spirit of Festivus. She has 3 grievances. 1, adults that wear pajamas and slippers in public. I don't care if it's 7 a.m. and you are at Dunkin' Donuts. Put on a pair of jeans and a real pair of shoes. You're not kindergartners. I have, Amy, when I was much younger and less employable, I've gone to the mall in slippers. They were comfortable. It's not a proud moment. Now I don't even like to go get the mail in slippers. I'd rather go barefoot, even when it's really cold outside. I don't know what it is, but I've come around with you on this one, Amy. I'm reformed. I guess you could say I'm reformed. I've done this. I now don't drink coffee or go to Dunkin' Donuts, but I've done this. And now I see it in the malls and I judge it. I judge it harshly, but a part of me in the back of my head still feels shame about what I've done. 2, people who knowingly and willfully take up 2 parking spaces. There is a ring of hell just waiting for you. Amen, Amy. It ties right into my first grievance. These people, I can kind of understand it if you have like a Maserati, right? And I don't even mind it if you're way out in what would be the nosebleed seats if parking were a stadium. If you're way out there and you don't want anybody parking near you, that's fine. It's when you get the combination of I don't want to burn any more calories than I have to walking into the store, and I'm going to park right up close and take up two spots or even diagonally across it. If you spent more than you can afford on your car and you're desperately concerned that somebody might ding it with their door of their car, you probably shouldn't have bought the car in the first place. The only people who should be buying, you know, Maseratis or things like that, oh, I can drop $200,000 on this car. Really? You live in a dump. Are people who go, you know what? I've got insurance. It's disposable. I can take care of it. Don't worry about it. If they break it, I can fix it. Cars aren't an investment. They're the worst investment ever. They're depleted 30% the second you drive off the lot. You're not special because you dropped an average house in the Midwest costs on your freaking car. Deal with it. If you want your car protected, don't drive it to the mall. First of all, if you're driving a really expensive car parked diagonally, what are you going to the mall for? Huh? Isn't there some rich guy's secret place you go and shop? But everybody else who drives crappy cars, who parks their cars across two spaces, again, everybody thinks they're special. What drives me nuts is the people who park in handicapped spots. My mother was handicapped, and I won't even pull into an ATM or a bank to use the ATM on a Sunday midnight and park in a handicapped spot if the ATM's right in front of it. I will park out of it. There's nobody coming. Nothing's going to happen. Nobody. I'm not going to be. I just can't do it. I won't do it. Those people who sit in their cars, I give them the dirtiest damn looks ever as they sit in their car because, oh, I'm just sitting in the handicapped spot waiting for somebody inside. God forbid I have to circle the parking lot a few times. It drives me nuts. I wish I could key all of their cars. And lastly, Amy says, people who walk their dogs off the leash in public places because they, quote, don't worry, he's friendly. You're an idiot and your dog deserves better. Enough said. Amy, well done. Yes, take care. You know, the other day I'm pulling in, I'm parking and I've got Quinn with me. We went to Costco or something. And I hear some barking and some yelling and whatever. And there's a dog kind of jumping at, not attacking the mailman, but circling the mailman like around the corner where you can see the streets are kind of screwy here. And you can see him, it's probably a football field away. The dog's jumping around, but not attacking the mailman. The mailman's spraying the dog with what I assume is pepper spray, although the dog's acting like it's Milk-Bone spray, and jumping around and jumping around. And there's this idiot kid who's probably 20 years old who didn't have his dog on a leash. And he's trying to control the dog without actually grabbing the dog. The mailman should have just kicked the dog like he's trying to punt from his own goal line. But the mailman didn't do that. He's panicked. And then the dog goes running by down the street. And this idiot kid goes chasing after it. And he's calling to the dog. And the dog would stop. And he gets up to the dog in the intersection in the middle of the street. And then he doesn't put the leash. He's got a leash. He's got a leash in his hand. It's not like he lost the leash. He took him off the leash or never hooked up the leash. And I thought, I kind of wish the dog would burrow through this kid's neck. It's probably a bit harsh, but I think a little bit of tough love and major reconstructive plastic surgery, provided the life-saving operation was successful, would maybe get through to this moron that you should walk your dog on a leash. Because that dog comes up to my kids anywhere near it. One night, I was drunk. I was about 23 years old. I was staying the night at my friend Jeff's house because there was no way I was going to be able to drive home. How we got back to Jeff's house, I believe Jeff drove. I don't know. We made it. It was before Uber. And you can't catch a cab in Detroit. There's just no cab. We drove. One of us drove drunk. There. Confession. We get out and it's me, George, and Jeff standing out in front of Jeff's apartment. He rented the upstairs of this house. And this German Shepherd comes running around the corner. Barking, big old German Shepherd, police dog, good-looking dog, comes barking. It's probably 3 o'clock in the morning, barking at me from two houses away. Jeff's house was the third house off the corner, and so I don't know why I was calling the dog over. Come on over, dog. Come on over here. I grew up with German Shepherds. I like German Shepherds. I like big dogs. The dog wasn't doing anything except barking at me. I don't know why. I don't know why I did it. I just tore off after the dog, started running after. I was never going to catch the dog. I'm probably the slowest runner on the face of the earth. Even when I was younger, I was incredibly slow. But I tore off after the dog, chased it about a block. It ran away. It was stupid. But if a dog ever tried to put your dogs on a leash, is what I'm saying. Dog comes after my kids, I am seriously going to, I'm trying for like an 80-yard field goal. I'm going to kick it into next week. And then I'm probably going to go after you much worse because you're the idiot. The dog is just threatening my kids. You're the idiot who put my kids in harm's way. And that's not cool. That's not acceptable. So, yeah, I get you, Amy. Put your dogs on a leash. It's not that hard. It's just, how much better would the world be if everybody just collectively decided not to be a jackass? Think about it. All you got to do is not be a jackass. The people who treat everything like life is a Red Rover game. You go to the mall, you go to the store, you go anywhere, and there's always the people walking side by side like they're off to see the wizard. It's four people, and they block up the whole way, which is fine if they're moving. As long as you're moving, I don't care what you're doing. And you're in a walkway and you're moving, I'm fine with you. It's when one of you decides to stop and look up at the ceiling fan or whatever the hell goes on in your head, and you just look up and everybody kind of stops as if they're the only people on the face of the freaking earth and block the whole way. And you're like, oh, excuse me. And then they look at you like, how dare you? Don't you see we're playing Red Rover here? Can't you see we're off to see the wizard? Why are you excusing yourself to go past me? Because you're in the freaking walkway, you morons. How about you just be, is it too much to ask that you be aware of your surroundings and act accordingly? The golden rule, just a little bit. How about, forget the golden rule, do unto others as you would want half done back to you. How about that? Can we get to that point? I think that it'd be a hell of a lot better than where we are now. Anyway, James writes in, love Festivus. James writes in, my grievance is with the Echo hoaxers. In the 1980s, I worked in a supermarket, the Grand Union, first job out of high school. Our store was forced to switch from paper bags to plastic bags because they were more eco-friendly. Paper mills polluted the environment and plastic bags were, quote, reusable. This coincided with the closure of most paper mills in the Northeast where I live, he writes. Destroying communities supported by mills and lumber. Well, he concludes, and this is so freaking true. Last week, the local supermarket announced that plastic bags would not be used anymore and were being replaced by recycled paper bags because they're better for the environment. What a joke. Jim, your grievance is well taken. It is absolutely true. I have ranted about this on many occasions. There's no good bag. I'd rather have no bag at all than some of the bags that the stores use. We have a bunch of grocery stores around this part of the country. We got, of course, the Whole Foods, who doesn't give you the choice of plastic, and the paper bags. Once they start ripping, it's over. Same with plastic. Once they start to rip, once it starts to tear, it's over. It's game. Everything's coming out. You might as well just give up. They have the Safeways. We have the Giants. We have the Shoppers Food Warehouses. We have these Aldi things where everything's frozen, and then there are some smaller ones and whatnot. And now we have Wegmans. Wegmans are awesome. But most of their plastic bags at all of these places suck. They suck. You sneeze at them and it rips open. It's paper thin. Your vision actually gets more clear if you try and look through it. It's so thin, nothing there. I'd rather have no bag whatsoever. Just give me a real bag. Give me a Target plastic bag. The award for best plastic bag in the business, for my money, goes to Target. And here's a little pro tip for you, Jim, because they'll probably come back with the plastic bag soon. Or if you live in a place where, you know, it's 5 cents per bag, because they encourage you to use the reusable plastic bags, you know, that are just cesspools, petri dishes for diseases, for everything that drips out of the meat and gets in the bag and then grows into God knows what, mutates into probably how The Walking Dead started. Go to the self-checkout aisle. Go to the self-checkout aisle every chance you get. Don't deal with the human beings, although I do appreciate the cashiers who don't ring you up for the bags. Or they go, there's 40 bags in your cart or however many, and they say, how many bags you got? And I'm like, what, two? And then I just pretend like you didn't really buy any bags. But go to the self-checkout and don't declare no bags. Just say when you hit the pay button, it comes up, how many store-bought bags did you, or store-provided bags did you like to purchase or whatever. I always answer zero because the question, at least at Safeway, is phrased, how many store provided bags would you like to purchase or something like that? And the answer is always zero, no matter how many I used, because I don't want to purchase any of them. I'm not lying. I feel this is perhaps a technicality, but I don't really give a damn. Screw these people. The money does not go to help clean up the environment. Half goes to the store, so they're on board with collecting it and screwing their customers. And the other half goes to the government because they started all of this and want to screw people. If they actually cared about the environment, as they claim, they would make the deposit, would make the money a deposit on the plastic bags. 5 cents per bag, but you get 5 cents back per bag when you return them to the store. Wouldn't that be nice? Now, you may go, well, screw it. I don't feel the need to go back to the store. I'm going to forget those bags or what the hell's 40 cents to me or whatever. But any bags you see on the side of the road, every bag you see floating in the water, in the park, into this, into that, suddenly you have deputized an army of homeless junkies, which, you know, they're there. You might as well get something out of it. And children who, like me growing up in Michigan, saw bottles and cans worth 10 cents each because of the Michigan 10-cent deposit. I subsidized my baseball card collecting habit and pack purchasing habit when I was a child by taking bags full of smelly, cheap crap beer up to the party stores and returning them and getting money for them. Make it worth something to everybody, if, of course, and then they'll disappear. But that's only if, of course, the objective is to remove them from the waterways and the parks and all that crap, like the politicians tell us they're trying to do. But we know they aren't. We know it's just about money. God, I hate these politicians. All right, Robert writes in. My Festivus grievance may seem trivial, but here goes. I'm a big coffee drinker. Well, you lost me right there, Robert, but I already read your email, and I agree with your sentiment about people who are stupid, but coffee, ugh. I'm a big coffee drinker. Every day, at least a few times a day, I go to 7-Eleven and get a cup of coffee. It takes me, on average, about 5 seconds to make a cup. After all, I perform this task several hundred times a year. Invariably, I will get stuck behind some asshat who pours a little coffee, adds a little frou-frou topping, stirs about 100 times, takes a sip with that annoying lip smacking, go back and add more coffee or topping, takes another sip until the mix is satisfactory. For God's sakes, you buy coffee every effing day. You don't know how you take it by now. I got a lot of problems with these people. Yeah, little George Costanza there at the end for Robert. I see these people. I am aware of these people. This is part of the reason. Coffee used to be, even though I've only had 2 cups of coffee in my life, I've had a lot of sips of coffee. I choked down 2 cups of coffee because, one, I was trying to be like my dad, and I'm not that cool. And two, it was freaking freezing, and they didn't have anything else hot. I didn't finish either one of them. But I am around coffee drinkers everywhere because you can't escape you people. It's a huge problem. You're like a cult. You're like Scientologists. You're on every street corner passing out personality tests, except it's coffee. You're just smelling each other's breaths. Coffee used to be pretty easy. It was coffee. Would you want coffee or do you want decaf? And decaf is for people, I think, who just hate themselves, who like want to make sure, like, my life sucks. I don't want to have it too good. I deserve bad things in life. So let me drink crap-flavored water, warm water, with no added benefit of waking up a little bit from it. I'll just suck down a cup of decaf. It's a cup of disappointment is what decaf is. It's all the crap flavor with none of the crap side effects. But it was pretty easy to get in and out of places. Now you go to a 7-Eleven, and they have a whole freaking aisle, both sides, set up with this coffee island. And there's this thing and the other. I go into 7-Elevens all the time, and I turn to the wife and say, what do you want? Will you get me a coffee? Like, what kind of coffee do you want? Oh, you know, just coffee. There's no such thing as just coffee anymore. She likes it with cream, and that's pretty easy to do. So, you know, she drinks about half of it. I think most cups of coffee that are actually sold from convenience stores get half to three quarters drank. That's it. I don't know anybody ever finishes one. But you sit there and you go, well, what kind of, do you want the French roast? Do you want the vanilla bean? Do you want the this one, the that one? And I'm not talking about the mocha lattes where they need a blender and they got to put 8 inches of whipped cream on the top of it to try and make it palatable, which it doesn't because the underlying flavor is still crap coffee. I'm talking about it's the dark roast. It's the special roast. It's our special blend. It's the this blend. It's the that blend. There's no difference. It's all crap. You're fooling yourself if you think that I love the deep, dark French roast. So different, so dramatically different. It's the difference between how much salt you put on your beans. You know, underneath, you still got beans. Doesn't matter how much salt and pepper you put on your beans, you've still got beans. It can tweak the flavor a little bit, but at the end of the day, you're still going to get gassy. So we should pump it back. And what the hell is it with this iced coffee crap? When I was a kid, now I sound all get off my lawny. But when I was a kid, it was all, you know, hot coffee, scalding hot coffee. You'd see adults standing around scared to death of tipping their coffee. The first couple of sips of coffee were like, where you're just really just inhaling the air and whatever's evaporating from the top of the coffee because it was so damn hot. And everybody was kind of afraid of, you know, that was back when you threw a cup of coffee at somebody's face. It was game on, you know, that'd burn them. Now, like, I want an iced coffee. I want the exact same thing, but the complete opposite. I wanted a different temperature. Something shouldn't be drank cold. I don't care if it seems to be more milk, judging by the looks of it. There isn't much, you know, I like an iced coffee, black. Who the hell wants that? But the only thing left to do with coffee technology is room temperature coffee. I think that's about it. You know, you want an iced coffee or a hot coffee? No. I want coffee that's been sitting out for about, 78 minutes. I think that 80 minutes is too much, whereas 60 minutes, it's still a little bit warm. 78 minutes is the sweet spot for me temperature-wise. Unless you're just going to chug iced coffee. Who goes, I want the flavor? Ugh. Coffee needs to be taken out of most things, not added to more things. Anyway, thank you, Robert. Yes, and back to my rant about the 7-Eleven coffee bar. It's literally a whole aisle, both sides. They have at least 6 different types of coffee in this pump thing, which I don't know since I don't use them. I'm like, is there any in here? I can't tell. Is it hot? Who the hell knows? And then you want to add the cream, and you got 14 different types of cream. Well, this is a French vanilla cream. Well, isn't there French vanilla coffee or French roast? I don't know. How surrendery do you need your coffee to be? And then there's the 18 different types of sugar. How about sugar? All right, I don't eat sugar, but sugar is pretty easy to understand, and I think sugar is a lot better for you than here is a list of 87 chemicals that, when put together in the proper proportions and mixed together in a centrifuge used for making nuclear weapons, it tastes a lot like sugar. But only use half of the amount that you normally would of sugar, or else you'll taste like a diabetic. How about we just use sugar? In moderation. Is that too much? Can we just all be sane adults, rational adults again? And be a little bit considerate of the people around you? Just a little bit considerate. Or you should be able to, like, smack them upside the head. Not hard, not knock them out, but, you know, just a little whap. Let them know you're there. And everybody understands it. Nobody goes, hey, you want to fight? No. We all understand that when you get the little tap upside the head, it's like, hey, you're being a dick. All right, move along. You're being a dick. All right, can you stop being a dick? That's it. It's just a stop being a dick tap. It's better than a dick tap. But it's stop being a dick tap. And then at which point you move to the side and you go, okay, I'm still going to be a dick, but I'm going to get out of everybody else's way. And I'll wait again until I'm not in everybody else's way. And we'll call that even. I can live with that. You can still get to be a dick. You just don't get to do it to anybody. I think that's a fair trade. All right, we'll do one more. Do one more of your emails. I still haven't gotten through half the emails. So barring major news develops, I'm going to declare, because I can, because it's my domain and nobody at the Daily Caller listens. Anyway, I am going to declare tomorrow Festivus Part 2, just because. We'll call it Festivus Part 2 Electric Boogaloo, because I've only gotten to one of my grievances, even though I've been ranting this whole time. But it's all set off by you people, and I appreciate that, even though I got a lot of problems with you people. So I'll carry Festivus over one more day, and cover whatever news happens then, and I'll read more of the emails because I got to get to the people who work the doors at Costco. You people. Anyway, let's go to Matt. Matt says, people who re-gift lame Christmas presents they receive from people who in turn probably re-gift those gifts to them. Quote, re-gifted those gifts to them. I have a sister who is a union card holding public school teacher in, I'll just redact the state in case his sister ever finds out, in my garage inside a plastic tote box filled with holiday brick and brack and decorations are numerous dopey stuffed snowmen, hand towels and soap dispensers festooned with Santa's face on them and other crap I received from her that I feel obligated to store in the event that my wife and I die and her kids descend on my home to loot my swag. We're getting older and don't have kids in the house. It's painfully obvious she receives this crap from parents and students hoping to bribe her with this seasonal dreck. We don't display any of it except for the wonderful and heartwarming we received that year. Oh, I love it. I'd take it to Goodwill, but they probably have a warehouse full of this stuff already. This is worse than a chain letter. I'm breaking the chain by not subjecting my friends to this stuff, Matt. Yes, the regifters and your sister, yeah, you know, because your sister wants to go through your stuff after you've passed on. Say, oh, look at this. They cared so much for it, they kept it in pristine shape. She doesn't want to draw the conclusion in her mind that you never found a use for it. And you didn't. It's like new because it's still new because you never used it. You stuck it in a Tupperware bin in the garage and called it a day. I have regifted things in the past, though. I'll have a little bit of confession time now. One of the things that I think drove Kmart out of business was Kmart's return policy. Kmart would take things back from other stores or would take things back as long as they sold it without a receipt. And they'd give you cash, which was when you're poor and desperate and conniving and resourceful. There are all sorts of negative ways to talk about this and positive ways to talk about it. I prefer the positive ones. When you're resourceful and innovative, you come up with creative ways of finding ways to make money or to get money so you can then afford to do stuff. I used to take things back to Kmart all the time that I'd had for a long time that, you know, sort of ubiquitous. Not opened, not used, not broken, but things that I'd gotten in trades when I worked in a comic book store. I, you know, get some action figures or whatever that, oh, maybe this will be worth something. And then the action figure market collapses and you didn't open it. And you're like, you know what? Target or Kmart will give me $7 for this. Books, things like that, back when they had books. Now Kmarts are depressing places to go. I still go to Kmart because of the memories that they bring back, but not really because of the memories I earn there. And I'd supplement, you know, not my income, but I would supplement my lifestyle by returning some stuff to Kmart. And if people gave me stuff that I'd say, oh, this is great, and I'd never, ever have a use for it, I could take it to Kmart and sell it back or return it or whatever. Maybe they were bought at Kmart. Maybe they were bought somewhere else. Didn't matter. All I know is I'm getting cash for it. So I understand that. I also have regifted some things that other people had given me that I had no use for. But I didn't do it sort of willy-nilly just to be cheap or just because I was poor. I did it because, well, I was poor and it was something that other person would like. So I'd say, hey, you know, and wrap it up. Christmas shopping done, because I couldn't. It's either re-gift something or they get nothing. You know, it's that kind of situation when you're, you know, at the end of the month waiting for your next work check or whatever, and you're filling up your gas tank with $4.78 on pump 5 because that's all you've got. So there is an argument for regifting. If you know somebody, Matt, who would, I don't know. I'd like to assume that you're cynical enough listening to this program. You don't know anybody who has Christmas hand towels on display. You could regift them to somebody if they're, you know, like, oh, they really go all out for Christmas. And then you go, hey, Earl next door and Betty, I know you guys go all out for Christmas. So we got you some of this Christmas crap, and you can kind of unburden yourself of it that way. But when you do pass on and your nieces and nephews go crawling through your remains of your life there in the garage, like they're the Borg trying to assimilate everything, and they don't find mommy's stash of hand towels that she'd been curating over the last years and asking you to hold them, there might be some issues there. But then again, you'll be gone, so what the hell do you care? So I'm not opposed to regifting in the grand scheme of things. It certainly is, if not done with care. If it's just, the classic Seinfeld thing of here's a bread maker nobody wants, or I guess that was a label maker. It was the bread maker in Wedding Crashers. No, Old School. If it's something that nobody wants, but it's an expensive gift, and you're just like, ooh, I could come off looking really cool because the boss gave me this, and I don't have any use for it, and nobody has any use for it. There are so many things related to the kitchen that most people have no use for, but everybody at some point, a high percentage of people buy them, like, ooh, a bread maker. This will be great. And then maybe they make one loaf of bread, and then they go, I'm never going to make another loaf, because they sell bread right at the store. The same store you buy all the ingredients to make bread, they sell bread, and it's pretty good bread. So you don't really need to make bread. We're not living out on the prairie. Don't regift your bread maker. But if it's, you know, something that somebody will actually use, hey, I've got another drill. Three people gave me a drill this year. It's a power cordless drill, and that's going to be useful to somebody. So don't open one of them, save the other ones, and regift them. Nobody will know. Somebody who gave you a drill isn't, you know, 6 months later in June going to go, hey, can I borrow that drill I got you for Christmas? And then they bought you a Black & Decker drill, and you got a different type of drill, Milwaukee. You got a Milwaukee drill. Like, hey, wait a second. Didn't I give you a Black & Decker drill? Where's the Black & Decker drill? Nobody's going to remember what type of drill they gave you. And if they do, they're going to catch you at something else already. So it's just better to get caught. Get caught. So regifting has its place, damn it. I'm not against it. Plus, the more stuff you give away, the better. All the books that I give away are technically regifted. They were gifted me by the publishers, and I regift them to you, and I reap all the glory and pay all the postage. Wait a second, this deal sucks. Anyway, like I said, I'm going to carry over Festivus to tomorrow with whatever news might happen on Monday. Hopefully nothing. Hopefully we'll have a peaceful, calm world and the Democrats don't screw anything up in the next 24 hours. And I'll read the rest of the emails. I guess that gives you a few, like half a day to send more airing of grievances if you have any. And then I'm going to go after the Costco people who work the exit doors. Can we just agree that that job is a sham and should be eliminated or something? Two types. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it now. I'll do it tomorrow. Thank you for listening. You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. The website to help out the show, if you're feeling the Christmas spirit, is patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. I don't have any other business to spread. Have a happy Festivus, part one. Part two, Electric Boogaloo tomorrow. I'll see you then.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.